Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India, which is how to stop our thoughts. Still, after meditation and yoga, I experience a lot of thoughts. How to decrease them? Thoughts are not in and of themselves bad. There's nothing inherently wrong with a thought. The problem is the power we've given to the thoughts. Right? First, Descartes tells us, I think, therefore I am. Wow. My thoughts are that which determines my existence. So that's one end of the extreme. I have thoughts, therefore I exist. The problem with that model, and interestingly, actually, he personally ended up rescinding that later in his life and changed it around to, I am, therefore I think. But that didn't get nearly as publicized as the I think, therefore I am, because the whole separateness of body and mind was so in vogue at that time. In any case, what we know is I am, therefore I think, not I think, therefore I am. And if you doubt that, I would cease to exist the minute my thought ended. I mean, no matter how many thoughts you have, in what rapid succession they come, there are brief moments when you don't have a thought. Maybe over like this, but they exist. If I thought, therefore I am, then after each thought, I would cease to exist. And if I ceased to exist, well, who would have the next thought? Who would be the thinker of the next thought? So, okay, we're not our thoughts. But that doesn't make them inherently evil. Our brain is a wonderful, wonderful tool. It's just not something that we want to let run the show. It's a beautiful saying that the mind is a great tool, but a very bad master. So you don't want to end your thoughts. Spirituality is not becoming dull. It's not an absence of thoughts, an absence of passion, an absence of life. Sometimes people think that when I become spiritual, or spiritual people are those who just kind of live like stones. But it's not that. What we become free of is the thoughts that trouble us. The thoughts that don't let us meditate. The thoughts that don't allow us to experience the space into which grace comes. So it's not about decreasing thoughts. It's simply about gaining an element of control of what my mind does, in the same way that I have an element of control of what my hand does. I get to decide, does my hand reach down and pick up this glass of water and drink it or not? Does my hand pick up the paper or not? Does my hand wave at you or not? I have control over that. Goal is not to cut off my hand. I mean, if suddenly I found my hand going all over the place like this, you know, and it was totally out of my control, well, the solution would not be it should be amputated. I mean, could you imagine saying, I've got this arm and it just flails all over the place and I don't know what to do, and the doctor saying, well, no problem, I'll cut it off for you. You'd say, oh, thanks, but no thanks, I'll let it flail. And in the same way, our thoughts, the goal is not how do I remove my thoughts. It's simply how do I use my brain as a tool. There's a lot of things in life it's good to think about. Anybody here ever get angry? Say things you wish you didn't say, do things you wish you didn't do? Well, it's really helpful afterwards to be able to think about that, what happened. As we were talking on the banks of Ganga in the Aarti, new year, new creation, new me. Well, that's a good thing to think about. How can I become new? What can I leave behind that's old, that's suffocating me, that's festering in me? How can I become new? How can I be the creation? There's so much that's beautiful to think about. It's your loved one's birthday coming up. Think about what are you going to do for them? The power of thought is lovely. You could never make a plane. Nobody could have gotten here if you couldn't think. You couldn't have made a flight reservation. You couldn't have booked a car. You couldn't have heard us in the Aarti. You couldn't have walked up here. You couldn't have done anything. Our thoughts are powerful. What we need is to just understand how to not make them run the show. And this just takes practice. This is what meditation does. This is what prayer does. The greatest tool I have found on a personal level is a mantra. Because the thoughts, the mind, are very much like a child or very much like a puppy. That literally just kind of runs all over the place. But if you give it something, you give your puppy a toy, you give the child a toy, they'll sit for a while, happily in the corner, playing with what you've given them. And a mantra gives the mind something to do. But it's actually much more powerful than that, because it's not just something to do. It's actually a vehicle that carries you from this state of consciousness into a higher state of consciousness. But the first thing that it does is gives the mind something to focus on. Because the truth is, you can only be thinking about one thing at a time. We may think you've got 100 things on your mind, but you can only be one place at a time. So in this moment, you're either here or you're someplace else. And you're only one other place. You're not going to be in 10 places. You may go from place to place to place to place to place, but you can only think about one thing at one time. So if I can be thinking about my mantra, doing my mantra, chanting my mantra, they say it should be not only verbal, you should actually be speaking the mantra, hearing the mantra in your own mind, seeing the mantra, that it occupies all of the senses. It's a very, very, very powerful tool. The breath is another very, very powerful tool. Bring the awareness to the breath. The minute the thoughts come, just bring the awareness. And the last suggestion I would offer is, one of the reasons that the thoughts plague us so much is we hook ourselves into them. We get a thought and we follow it across our consciousness. So we're sitting here, then suddenly we think about what we ate for dinner last night. Maybe we're hungry, maybe we know it's almost dinner time now, so naturally last night's dinner becomes something on our mind. And that thought comes, it's only a 2-second thought. But what we do is we hook ourselves into it. Yeah, that last night dinner was really good. God, those it was so nice to be with those people. I wonder when we're going to get to see them again. God, she looked like she'd put on some weight. And they didn't talk to each other much. I hope they're not having trouble in their marriage. So you see, I've gone from one relatively harmless thought, which was very quick, just about dinner last night, to an entire soap opera of the people with whom we happen to share the meal. Because what I've done is I've hooked myself into the thought. And if instead of that, we can just allow them to breeze across our awareness, but stay focused on the space between them. So the other thing we do when the thoughts come is suddenly I'm thinking about dinner of last night. And then I go in my own mind, oh, look at you. You're the worst. Like, we've only been sitting here for, what, 15 minutes and you can't even focus? You're never going to be spiritual. You're never going to get this meditation thing done. Look at you, always on dinner. Forget it. You're not going to have any dinner. I'm going to make you fast today. This is your punishment. Then, of course, the other mind goes, oh, my God, but I can't fast. I've got low blood sugar. What's going to happen? Oh, my God, I'm going to go into, you know, diabetic shock here. There's not even a hospital nearby. So, again, I've taken something that was really small, really short, really innocuous, would have been over in a couple seconds. And now I've really ruined my meditation. Now I've given myself, you know, an insulin shock in my own mind. And this is where what we have to do is just, it comes. We don't hook ourselves into it. We don't look at it. We don't name it. We don't analyze it. We stay focused on the space between the thoughts. A visualization to think of is if you're staring up at a blue sky and clouds are going by, well, either you can focus your attention on a cloud and follow it all the way across the sky, or you can stay focused on the blueness as the clouds go. And the goal is to stay focused on the blueness. And the clouds just breeze by. The thoughts just breeze by. And slowly, 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 if you can refrain from hooking yourself into the cloud, into the thought, if you can refrain from the judgment and the berating of the self and the analysis of the thought or the analysis of the fact that you're having a thought, just stay focused on the blueness of the sky, on the mantra, on the breath. And yeah, the thoughts will just blow across your consciousness. And slowly the space between them will get longer and longer. And they'll blow across even quicker and quicker and quicker. But don't see thoughts as the enemy. Thoughts are your friends. Your lack of control of the mind is the enemy, not the thoughts themselves. And that control can be learned and achieved the same way that we learn control over our fingers to play the piano, the same way we learn control over our feet to do dance, the same way we learn to do everything with any organ of the body. We can train the mind. Just takes practice.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Biggest adversity I have faced on the spiritual path. My own ego, for sure. The outer world is just the outer world. A rainy day, a sunny day, a mountain, a river, a flower. They just are. How I respond to them is what creates problems in my life. In the same way, people who love me are just people who love me. People who don't love me are just people who don't love me. People who are nice to me are just people who, in that moment, are able from the toolbox that they've got to find the nice tool, to recognize it, to pull it out at that moment and to use it. People who are not nice to me are people who open their toolbox and cannot locate the nice tool. And in its place, they pull out the bullying tool or the competitive tool or the angry tool or the critic tool, and they use that instead. But that's all they are. And it's my reaction to them, like my reaction to the rainy day or the sunny day or the mountain or the river, that creates the problems in my life. So on a spiritual path, the highest goal, I mean, if I were in business aiming to be CEO, or I had become CEO, and you said, what was your greatest adversity? Well, obviously, I'd give you adversity that was on my path to becoming CEO. But on a spiritual path, the goal is to connect with spirit, to focus on spirit. That's all it's about. To live as spirit, not to live in the illusion of myself as this body, not to live in the illusion of other people as their body. So not to judge myself based on what the body looks like, what color it is, what gender it is, how much money it's got in a bank account, what degrees it's got sitting in a filing cabinet somewhere. What's happened to it that shouldn't have happened, what didn't happen to it that should have happened. That's all just identification with the body. Similarly with my emotions, it's also body. My whole brain, all of the neurons with their electrical and chemical patterns that we call anger or call sadness, or called depression. It's all part of the physical body. If you removed my brain, miraculously, my depression would disappear. I mean, it feels core to who I am, but it actually exists in a neural pathway and chemicals and electricity in my brain. Who I am is spirit. So the goal of spirituality is to live as spirit, not as a separate spirit, of course, but as part of the divine, supreme, God, infinite, whatever word we use, and to connect with others like that. But it's the ego that gets in the way. The ego is the one that wants people to be nice to me. And that when you're not, that then gets hurt inside. Well, if I'm hurt inside, I'm no longer connected as spirit. Because the spirit doesn't get hurt, the ego gets hurt. The ego is the one with the expectation. I mean, nobody expects the Pope to call them up. Nobody expects the Queen of England to call them up. I mean, you don't wake up in the morning depressed again because the Pope hasn't called. Well, this is important because we'd all be pretty excited and happy should he decide to call. Or, you know, should the Queen of England decide to call, or should somebody like that decide to pick up the phone and call us, it would be pretty exciting. But we have no expectation of it happening. And since we have no expectation, the lack of it happening does not depress us, despite how nice it would be for it to happen. We also don't expect to win the lottery. Very few people move through the world depressed that they haven't won the lottery yet. If you do, fantastic. But we don't have an expectation. The depression in our life, the problems in our life come from that which I expect to happen. I don't expect to win Miss Universe. I don't expect to win the Nobel Prize. I don't expect the Pope to call me up. So there's no depression associated with that not happening. But when I expect that people should act in a certain way, that people should treat me in a certain way, that the world should be in a certain way, that's when I get depressed. That's what hurts me. But that's what the ego does. The ego gives us a frame for how things should be. This is right, this is not right. And that's the greatest challenge, because every moment that I'm attached to something of this body, to what it looks like, to what happens to it, it's a moment I'm not living as spirit. And every moment that I see others as bodies, so judging people as bodies, judging them based on the color of their skin, judging them based on their culture, by their gender, by their attractiveness, by their career, I'm not living as spirit. And I'm not creating the space for them to live as spirit. Because something really beautiful happens when you commit to a spiritual practice, is it's not only you, you actually open the door. You can't push anybody through it, unfortunately, but you open the door for others to also live as spirit. Because if I'm interacting with you as body to body, so as we talk, I'm checking you out, or I'm looking at your bag, or your shawl, or whatever it is. Well, I'm seeing you as an object. You feel it. But if I'm connecting with you spirit to spirit, then I'm inviting you in that moment to respond to me from a place of spirit. Which is a beautiful invitation to give people. They're not all going to take you up on it. Many of them will not. So no expectation that anybody's going to walk through any door you've opened. But that's the greatest challenge, is our own attachment to how things should be. And you have to let it go, because we have no idea how things should be. None. We have a lot of attachment to how we think they should be, but we actually don't know. And since we don't know, those expectations are in vain.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment, a philanthropic organization their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Remember that Dharma is who you are, and desire is for something outside of you. So I don't desire what I already have. I haven't spent one moment of my life desiring curly hair. I have it already. I haven't spent a moment of my life desiring to be a white American female. It's already what I am. Desire is always for something different than the moment, different than what we have. I could desire to be Indian, not what I am. I could desire to be male, not what I am. I could desire to be so many things, not what I am. So desire is always based in that which is not in existence. Dharma is there. Whether you live by it or not is up to you. But your dharma is there. Living by it is what holds you together. Ignoring it is what tends to make us fall apart. So if you find yourself yearning for something from outside, it's a desire. If you find yourself yearning for something inside even, it's still a desire. Now, but here's what's important. Desires are not bad. We're not putting labels on things. Desires in and of themselves are not the enemy. It is our attachment to the fulfillment of the desires that's the problem. Because since the vast majority of our desires are things outside, I have no control over whether it gets fulfilled or not. I have a desire that you're going to give me your chocolate ice cream cone. But whether you do it or not, it's up to you. I have a desire that you're going to tell me you love me. But I have no control over whether you do it or not. I have a desire that it's going to be a sunny day that I've planned for my picnic. No control over it. Nothing wrong with desire. The problem comes with how miserable I become when it doesn't happen. Because along with the desire tends to come an expectation that I will get the desire fulfilled. And that's where we get stuck. I desire enlightenment, but every day I wake up unenlightened, I'm furious. Yeah? So you see how I'm actually pushing myself farther away? Desire's great. If you're going to desire anything, might as well desire enlightenment. But we have to be careful about what happens when it's not fulfilled, because in many cases it pushes us actually farther from the goal. And that's true for most of the good things. If I desire your love, but I'm so angry that you don't yet love me, how dare you? Who the hell do you think you are? Well, chances are I haven't just made you love me more. So those expectations tend to push it away from us. Desires themselves are catalysts. If I didn't desire anything, I wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. I desire to make a difference in the world. I desire to live my dharma. I desire a fulfilled life. For those things, I've got to get out of bed. If I didn't desire those things, I wouldn't get out of bed. So desires are a catalyst. But we just have to watch what happens when the desire is not fulfilled. And that's where it's important to remember it's God's will. That we don't have control. The only thing we have control over is ourselves. And actually, in a beautiful place to close, one of my favorite teachings is from an incredible saint who passed away a couple of years ago, but who used to live just across the river, who said, the only definition of success, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said something like, the only definition of success that means anything. He says, I don't care how much you achieve, where you've reached, what you get. The only definition of success that means anything is how you respond to the inevitable times, that the universe does not act in the way you think it should. So success has nothing to do with somebody giving me a raise, giving me a promotion, somebody touching my feet, some stock market going up and my bank balance getting bigger. It has only to do with how I respond in the times that that doesn't happen.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. How can there be a God when there is so much craziness in the world? And whether it's the wars, the ugliness, as you said, that goes on across the world, or whether it's the loss of a loved one, and so much on that spectrum in between. Things happen that make us wonder, well, this doesn't fit in with my picture of God. I was connected to God, but then suddenly things started happening that no longer, it was like, what's happened to you? You've changed. I'm no longer in love, right? We had this beautiful relationship, but then it almost starts to feel like a betrayal. I trusted you, I loved you, and now you've let me down. And this is really, really painful and really real. What's important to remember, first of all, is that there's no scripture in the world that I know of, no quotation of God in any language, in any tradition, in which it says, connect to me, love me, and bad things will never happen. And the reason that this is so important is we take it like that almost implicitly, but it's not actually said to us. It's not a choice between either there's God or there is this ugliness and pain. And the question becomes, well, how can there be both? What kind of conception of God would I have in order for there to be room for this ugliness? Because obviously the answer is not ignore it. That gets us into the state, you know, that I joke about a lot of, I've had this beautiful meditation. I'm in so much peace. I'm in so much bliss. Just don't come near me. Don't talk to me. Don't make me go anywhere or do anything because I'm in peace right now. And that's not very sustainable, sadly. It's beautiful while it lasts, and we all know that feeling. But it's not sustainable. In order for it to be sustainable, we have to be able to do it with our eyes open. It cannot require the absence of a certain person or of a certain situation or of a certain experience. Because remember that God is infinite. And if he, she, it is infinite, then it has to encompass and include everything. Which means the minute I start saying, well, this can't fit here, it's no longer God I'm talking about. It's my creation, my projection of what God would be if I were in charge of creating God. And that wasn't a task we were given with. So this infiniteness includes a lot of things. And one of the things that it includes is free will. It's not that God created ugliness, because this is a lot of times how it comes up. Why did God create ugliness? Why did God create evil? God didn't create evil or ugliness. It's not like he took a magic wand and said, okay, you're going to be good and you're going to be evil. The way that we are taught about this, in short, but a way that for me at least really helps me understand the role that God plays and the role that just human nature plays, is who we are at the core is divine. And we know that because we've been created out of God. Remove infinity from infinity, you've got infinity. Our saints tell it to us, our math teachers tell it to us. Either way, if you have something that is infinite, you have something that is divine, from that you create 1 or 2 or 10 billion other pieces. Well, each of them is also infinite. I mean, infinity divided by 7 billion is infinity, mathematically. So what we are at the core is divine. However, we have this body, which is our vehicle for awakening, the medium through which we are able to experience our own consciousness. We're the only species, and this is why they talk about a human birth being the highest level birth and the birth in which we can attain enlightenment, is we're the only species that is able to look at its own consciousness. Most of the animals certainly seem much better than we are. They eat only as much as they need. They attack only if they've been attacked first. They pretty much live and let live. There's an incredible harmony in nature. So if you just looked at it like that, you'd wonder, well, it's amazing that any human ever gets enlightened, and it's amazing that any animal doesn't. The issue is that as humans, we have something that none of the other species has, which is the ability to step out of the doer and to watch it. When we talk about the witness, that I'm able to watch my own consciousness. That's something only we have. So this body is the vehicle for, the medium of our awakening. But what happens is we identify with it. And we start to think that this is who I am. It's color, it's age, it's beauty, it's education, all of that. So we start to identify as, here's who I am. Based on that, then, we end up with anger. If I am this body, I am what I own, I am my relationships, and you do something to infringe on that, to hurt that, well, I'm going to get angry. The same way that an animal is going to protect its property. Maybe only a small area. But if this is my territory, I've peed here, I've peed there, this is now mine. Right? That's how animals do it. And you infringe on that, you can be pretty sure I'm going to get angry. Well, we do the same thing. We don't do it by peeing all over, because we've got the mental constructs to just do it. This is who I am. This is mine. This is me. But if you infringe on it, it makes me angry. If someone seems to have a better package deal than I do, I feel jealous. I start to compete. Then we lie, then we cheat, and then the stories go on. The reason that I take you through this journey is that which you're seeing in the world is the result of ignorance. And it's ignorance that says, I am this body. A lot of the ugliness is based on, I identify as this religion or that religion, this culture or that culture, this color or that color. If I identify as consciousness, and I see you as consciousness, I've got a body, you've got a body, the same way that I've got a car, you've got a car, I've got a pair of socks, you've got a pair of socks. But I'm not going to identify you as your socks. I'm perfectly able to understand that they're just what's covering your feet to keep them warm. If I'm able to understand you are consciousness, you are soul, you are essence, and this body is just what you're wearing, like you wear a pair of socks or shoes, well, then we're not going to go to war over which color your socks are and which color my socks are. Which culture you're from, which culture I'm from. Which book you subscribe to, which book I subscribe to, which language you use to talk about essence, which language I use. The core of all of that comes from the ignorance of identifying as this body. If I don't identify as my religion or my color or my culture or my gender, then you can be pretty sure I'm not going to harm someone else based on their religion or culture or color or gender. The other piece of it is, if I identify as the body, then my highest goal is feeding the desires of the body. If I am this body, then when the body yells, "I want it," well, I better give it to it, because that's who I am. It's what I need. And it gets to an extreme. Yesterday, I was having a session with a group of people who are on a retreat for recovery from addiction. And that, it takes it to an extreme. If I don't have it, if I'm an alcoholic and I can't drink, if I'm an addict and I can't use, whatever my addiction may be, everything from Facebook to heroin and everything in between, if I can't have it, there's a level of anxiety that builds and a sense that I'm going to fall apart. Because if I am the body, I need it. And so whether I'm looking for something to fill my hunger, something to fill my ego, I'm going to do it because that's who I am. I am that hunger. I am that lust. I am that greed. I am that ego. And this is what leads to the ugliness. But that's not what God created. God created us as divine. From him, her, itself. Out of him, her, itself. Our ignorance is what leads to the ugliness. Our identification is what leads to the ugliness. And so the question becomes not how can God let this happen, but how can I start a revolution of people not buying into that illusion, not buying into that ignorance. People who say, "I refuse to look at you based on your religion, color, culture, gender." That's what we need. And that's the path that's truest to the way that God created us. Maybe if he could do it all again, he wouldn't give us free will. You know, if parents, you must have had the experience of giving your child a present once that they really wanted and then you really regret it. Shouldn't have given him that. But it's given. So I don't know, maybe if God were going to do it all again, we wouldn't get free will. Clearly we've abused it. But just like a parent who gives something to the child with the best intentions, and the child then in a moment of anger, ignorance, greed, whatever, goes out and does something stupid with what the parent has just given them, doesn't mean the parent doesn't exist. Doesn't mean the parent doesn't have the best intentions. It just means that when the umbilical cord was cut, the child got his own legs, his own arms, his own brain. And you can't really control everything your children do. And God, of course, could in theory control it, but as part of the package of nature, chose to give us free will and chose to give us the law of karma, which in many cases is an even more powerful element than control. If God were controlling everything, there'd be no place for karma. Because then I wouldn't have done any act anyway. I would just be a puppet. So there would be no karma to experience. But in order for us to have karma, we have to have free will to make choices. And so maybe the point was that God really wanted us to understand the law of karma and how that works and what that means. And to finally get to the point of saying, okay, enough. Hence, we've been given free will. But right now, God and you and the world need you to get back connected. Because if the only people who are being deeply inspired from within are people who are being inspired to do harm, and the rest of us are just disconnected, the ugliness is just going to grow. The problems are just going to grow. We have to get connected, knowing that that power is all powerful. Just needs enough of us to connect to it. I'll end with one of my favorite stories, true story, of a professor I had in my psych PhD program, who her husband was a chaplain. So they were very, very, very religious. And in addition to being a professor, she worked with children who were dying of AIDS. And someone said to her one day, "How do you do it? How do you hold both of these realities in your life and in your heart? On the one hand, this deep belief that you must have. I mean, your husband's a chaplain, you're very religious. How do you hold this deep belief in God? And a plan, divine plan, on the one hand, and spend most of your day with children who are suffering and dying through no fault of their own, on the other hand." And she gave an answer, and it's now been well over 20 years, but I've held it very deeply all these years. She said, I never doubt the presence of God. And I never doubt the presence of a plan. She said, but I do find myself sometimes asking God whether maybe there couldn't be a better plan. And I loved that. And I hold on to it, because connecting to God doesn't mean that we're not allowed to question. Doesn't mean we're not allowed to wonder. Doesn't mean that we're not allowed to ever ask whether, couldn't there maybe, don't you think, if you just maybe, you know, came to me for some advice, I could really help you out here. When we have a personal relationship with God, it's all allowed. God never said, thou shalt not ask questions. But the answer to the question is not to cut yourself off. Because then you've cut yourself off from the well, the spring, from which you drink. We need God. God doesn't need us. We need that connection. So reconnect yourself in a broader, bigger, more all-encompassing way. Then instead of God being a one with a wand of sitting up there making the decisions, a creator, a knower, a planner. Whose creation, pieces of it, are in the midst of a sort of Frankenstein effect. that free will thing that they were given is running amok. But that doesn't change the presence and the power of the divine. Just makes us more responsible to bring them back from running even more amok. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio. Thank you.